this is Gilbert Gottfried. Welcome to Behind the Scenes with Brian, your go-to podcast on old things mining.
Welcome to Behind the Scenes with Brian, the podcast covering everything from engineering, mining, and mine waste management to whatever else may be on our minds. Pop in your headphones and don't forget to rate, subscribe, and share. And now, here is your host, Brian Ulrich.
Hey everyone, this is Brian, and this is Behind the Scenes with Brian, and today I am joined by Ken Rawl. Ken, how are you today?
I'm good, thank you. How are you?
Good, very well. And you're in the Salt Lake area today?
Yes.
Okay, and I know you've got an amazing facility. We'll talk about that a little bit later. So, Ken, tell us a little bit about yourself, your background, your education.
Sure, I grew up in Virginia and on the East Coast of the U.S. and got my bachelor's degree in chemical engineering. Got interested in mining because it gave me an opportunity to go overseas. So after my bachelor's, I went over to Australia, and for about 5 years, I worked in some postgraduate work, studies. Spent about 4 years in Australia, a year in South Africa. Before coming back to the U.S. So I initially started out in flotation. That was many moons ago. Then kind of came back, left mining for a little while, did manufacturing, and then came back into mining a little over 10 years ago when I came to FLSmidth. And started out here in the research group, and then moved into our product line, and then about almost exactly 7 years ago, we formed the tailings group here that would be dedicated to looking at developing, our tailings solutions, as well as supporting customers and their inquiries and their basically their path and trials and tribulations of learning more about tailings and how it can hopefully move us towards more sustainable mining methods.
Yeah, great. Looking back on that decision, it seems kind of like a no-brainer now, but 7 years ago was probably a pretty major decision to make.
Yeah, it was. I mean, I think, when we started out, I formed the group, was part of the forming group, and then 2 years ago, I took over as lead of the group.
Yep.
Yeah, and for the first, year or two, I mean, we had to spend a lot of time really kind of letting both FLSmidth and all the regions and all the employees, as well as customers globally, know that we existed and we were focused on helping them with investigating the different tailing solutions and working internally on with the different product managers on linking everything together into the different flow sheets that are most commonly used and the different, we'll say, alternate tailing solutions. So it was a journey, and over time we've seen kind of the inquiries continue to increase and change from just wanting general information to wanting lab testing to wanting inquiries on pilot to the last couple of years. There's been a lot more activity of customers actually implementing filtered tailings at mine sites.
So let's just step back a little bit and tell me a little bit more about what all FLSmidth does as a company, not just the tailings group, but the company at large.
So yeah, we basically are begin in at the pit for open pits. I mean, we have in pit crushing and conveying systems, and basically can start from there all the way through crushing, separations, flotation plants, to the dewatering, obviously, and then conveyor system out to if you're doing filtered tailings, we've got deep cone thickeners for paste tailings along with our Krebs line of pumps, so we basically can do a full flow sheet from beginning to to the end for most of your concentrators.
Yeah, okay. That gives me a better idea. So getting back to the tailings, let's talk about what you do so far as tailings goes.
So we spend quite a lot of time discussing with customers the different solutions and really trying to help them understand what's going to work best for them at any one given site. I mean, every site is different. You know, there's different material characteristics, there's different regulations, there's different social expectations from communities. Yeah. So we start off a lot of the time talking to these customers, and then we'll move into doing lab conceptual studies where we're maybe testing different flow sheet options or different tailing streams coming from different parts of the plant, and then helping them understand what those flow sheets and kind of the conceptual costs would be for the major equipment. And then obviously we can take the next step up to pilot testing. We've been doing that for years now, providing the dewatering equipment and operating the material handling kind of studies that were part of the EcoTails solution, that where we looked at combining dewatered tailings with waste rock or overburden. So we can look at both the dewatering and the conveying and the mixing at the pilot scale. Once we go ahead.
So the concept and possibility and future of EcoTails has not stopped with the acquisition of Goldcorp?
No, I think it was put on pause for a little while, which is kind of expected. I mean, Newmont had to look through their portfolio of what has been, projects being worked on.
Yeah.
And I think, for the last couple of years, they've been pretty active. They've worked with putting together, a consortium of companies that are now looking at it. So there's been a delay, and I think it was just kind of, in my opinion, it seemed to be a normal delay when an acquisition happens. They see the merits and the interest in EcoTails as a co-mingled way of co-mingling and disposing of the material, all the material together, waste materials, that is. So I think it's revving up again. We're seeing a lot of interest. We're talking to multiple customers about being able to do that pilot testing to help them better understand.
That's great. And I think that's one of the applications that has got just as bright of a future as filtered tailings. It ends in a different product that might be a solution to acid rock drainage.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, you're just kind of hiding the tailings in the rock pore spaces so you can take up less volume on land if you combine the two. There's a lot of really pretty unique advantages of the, I call it blended tailings and waste rock, but the EcoTails, same notion.
Yeah, co-mingling or co-disposal has been done for a while. At smaller mines, what we developed was really to try to solve how to make it economic for larger throughput mines. Where you're going to be conveying, and how do you get it mixed together at the most efficient, cost wise. The interest is moving forward again, and I think it is, it's another option to look at for customers. So it's all about finding the right solution for a given site. I mean, as customers continue to move forward, we're seeing a lot of them even doing pre-feasibility and feasibility study level in terms of the accuracy of the costing. And those, they'll typically hire an engineering house, and then we play a supporting role to the engineering house doing testing and product sizing and product engineering. There's been a lot of activity. We've expanded the group since we started it. We started with two of us, and now there's three of us. And so I see it a lot more just going around. There are some regulatory changes happening in the world because of the failures that have unfortunately happened recently, in the last decade or so. So there are regulatory changes that a lot of customers are really you know, really focused on these alternate tailings solutions and how can they make it as economic, you know, as possible, and but still get away from large wet impoundments.
Yep. Yeah, a lot of changes since those two horrible tailings failures in Brazil.
Yeah, and you know, that's, you know, like it's unfortunately, I think it took something like that to really, I think, wake up a lot of people or open our eyes, because they were such, you know, big disasters, really. I mean, both in human and environmental toll they took. It really did, I think, create a shift in thinking that that way of doing business is not sustainable as an industry.
Yeah. It's too bad it took us so long to realize that. I mean, not me and you, but you know, just the industry at large. Mm-hmm. The Mount Pauley failure in Canada that preceded that by a little bit. That was a real eye opener for the Canadians, because they write all these regulations and policies and guidelines. And when Mount Pauley failed in Canada, they thought that it would never happen in their own backyard.
Yeah,
because of their really advanced practices. So it was unfortunate that didn't help the rest of the world. It took until the Brazilian incidents.
Yeah. I think that, like I said, I think that's created a mind shift, and we've seen that even up at the highest levels in companies, are looking at this as the way forward. It has to be sustainable. You know, there has to be a change in the business. Yeah, it's active globally. All parts of the world are looking at, you know, investigating how they can be more sustainable, all the way through the flow sheet.
Yeah. So, Ken, I was fortunate enough to tour your facility. It must have been about 10 years ago. And as a geotechnical engineer, I was really impressed by all of the mineralogy type studies that you do, because you want to know as much as you can about the clay for the same reason that I do, except you want to make sure that the tailings gets filtered. I want to make sure that the stack is stable. So we kind of have the same goals in mind of understanding the clays as much as we can.
Yeah, agreed. I mean, what we've found is, you know, the clays, particularly the swelling clays, can be problematic to filtration. They have a tendency to cause blinding, and they're also, you know, even in your sedimentation, you know, thickeners, those ultra fines, you know, clays and things, they have trouble settling. So you're going to have trouble with your overflow clarity. And so it's, you know, it is a big deal for the dewatering. And obviously then it becomes, I've learned over time, you know, kind of your area of expertise, viewpoint of how those clays can be detrimental as well to the stability. So we do look at that, and we see its impact on the dewatering. We do see some impact on the conveying, just because clays can tend to hold on to moisture sometimes, and that does affect the conveyability of the material.
Right. Yeah, that's for sure. So just tell me a little bit about the different mineralogy, the types of studies that you do. I don't even know what to call them, but you've got X-ray diffraction, and I'm not sure what all else you use to look at the clays.
We have a method for determining the swelling clays using cation exchange. Yeah. So we're able to use XRD, we have XRF, I believe, and then we've got the libration analyzers, you know, and so, but it's really in combination with XRD and the cation exchange methodology, we get a full mineralogy, and especially looking at the problematic ones. I mean, silica's not my problem child. It is those clays, and that's been beneficial when we look at tailing samples to really nail down into what is, you know, the clays, as I mentioned before, the swelling clays can be problematic, but the clays in general are problematic because they always tend to be in the finest size fractions. Yeah. And it's really, you know, when you're talking upstream from dewatering, there's a lot of discussion of P80, but when it comes to dewatering, you're really needing to understand what's below 20 microns, what's below 10 microns, what's below 2 microns. So those are going to drive your dewatering performance. And so being able to look at what typically ends up in those lowest size, smallest size fractions and dig into what are they really composed of helps us in understanding why one plant that is, you know, by all appearances, you know, has, you know, X amount of copper in the feed, X amount of, you know, total clay in the tails, could be behaving differently than a plant with similar, you know, we'll say broad similarities in the tailings, but could have a different type. So if it's just chlorites versus, you know, you've got your swelling clays, it could perform, you know, it could be, behave differently. So being able to look at really characterizing those strained PSDs, you know, using Malverns at the lowest size fractions, laser diffraction type stuff, it gives us a better understanding and gives us an indication of where we may have to move towards. You know, there's coarse material, coarser tailings, I would say, you know, you can look at, you know, if it's coarse enough, dewatering screens, if it's intermediate, you've got, you know, your centrifuges and vacuum filters. So being able to understand the stream characteristics guides us sometimes, because we do have customers that just come and say, we need to understand, we want to look at a few different technologies. What do you recommend? And so we look at the stream characteristics, we'll characterize a sample and say, well, these are the two or three options we could potentially look at, you know, in the lab and test. So you can look at some options and see the trade-off between them and what can even achieve your moisture target.
Okay. So Ken, what kind of range of production are people trying to do filtration with now?
I think at the execution side where they're actually implementing, you're still maxing out in that, you know, 30, 40, 50,000 ton per day, metric ton per day size. But some of the bigger mines have been doing, looking at the pilot scale. So you've got 100,000, 200,000 ton per day miners are looking at it at the pilot scale. Even inquiring at a demonstration level where we would put in a full scale filter. There's a couple miners that are testing full scale filters now to get a better understanding of how these, you know, the true operating experience, including cost of really large filters. I mean, over the years, filters have kept getting bigger.
Yeah.
We did the launch in our 5x3 5 meter by 3 meter filter, you know, some years back down in Tucson. We have the test rig for it that we can use to trial and can, you know, show a customer that, you know, you can at those sizes produce a homogeneous cake. But I think it's the smaller ones are because there's more history at the smaller scale. They've been buying. But the larger ones, they are, you know, historically, they just would have felt, I think, that it's too expensive. But now, the fact that they're putting down quite a bit of money to go all the way up through pilot scale and pretty serious investigations into it is truly indicative of the change in mindset and the commitment to looking at these alternatives.
Yeah, for sure. I worked on a project somewhere between 10 and 15 years ago, where we were supposed to be studying filtered tailings at about 60,000 tons a day. And some of my counterparts were just saying, it can't be done. We'll never do it. We can't. It's just not possible. And I just kept saying, well, let's just work through the problem here and find out. So, you know, fast forward 10 years and people are doing it at 50,000 tons a day and looking at it at six times that much.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think one of the things that's changed, and as you mentioned, you know, 10 years ago, there was one part of the issue we would have had 10 years ago was the size of filters commercially available.
Yeah.
You just, for larger tonnages, you would have needed just far, you know, way, you know, far too many of them to be practical in terms of operating that many with so many people. And so the industry, the OEMs of all of us have looked at increasing size of the filters to reduce the number needed. And we did that, you know, back obviously when we were looking through EcoTails and developing the 5x3 filter. And I think, but in recent years, as the industry as a whole is looking at two things. One, looking at better understanding, not just getting fewer filters, but what's the real operating cost. And that's why there's more looking at doing some long-term pilot or demonstration level testing to get a comfort level around the true operating cost of the larger filters. And then, you know, we as a manufacturer have looked at, you know, we've got sizes where, you know, that are selling, and but how do we, now that we customers are buying more and more filters, we've been looking at the last couple of years at that operating side as well. And how do we bring that down so that your total cost of ownership is better? And one of the things we have looked at is, you know, the media, the plates, but also digitalization. I mean, to better control the units through better, you know, better data and better expert control systems. So we've been working through all of that through our R&D efforts. Much of it's been field trialed, you know, put in production, you know, trials. And so some of it that's there to filter cake moisture sensors and and teleplates that that'll detect holes in the filter media, so you replace it before the plate gets damaged, which is even more expensive. These have all been put through initial industrial testing and should be available soon commercially. Once you're doing some tweaks on them based upon feedback from the industrial testing.
Okay, great. Just going back to the EcoTails a little bit, do you know what kind of consistency people are looking at for the tailings part of it? Is it a high density tailings, or is it a filtered product, or what do people seem to be looking at there?
Most of it is mixing filtered tailings. We have had a couple that have inquired about mixing paste. One has even, I believe, trialed it.
Okay, interesting.
Yeah, you know, and that work, you know, there was work done at the University of Alberta that looked at the geotechnical side of mixing. You know, I think they called it paste rock.
Ward Wilson, his group.
So, again, we were looking at it as how, you know, they mix it up manually, but how do you do that in the field? So.
Yeah,
we've kind of helped look at that at the pilot scale and kind of visualized how, that's producing paste at the pilot scale, and then still doing a manual mixing just to a lot of the extent, I think, by placing it on, you know, just a grasshopper and chucking it out. But we're still looking at, you know, where, how do you add them and mix them, you know, in production at full scale? Mm-hmm. Because the last thing you want to do is create extra cost that kind of negates the advantages of the paste versus filtered. So it's an analysis that we're continuing to go through and see how we can best bring that solution to market, really.
Yeah. And from a geotechnical perspective, there's bound to be an optimal moisture content for the tailings to get good compaction.
Mm-hmm.
And I've often thought, well, maybe you'd need a belt filter instead of a plate and frame. Maybe you need a little bit more moisture in there to get good compaction.
Well, that's I think, depending upon, I mean, that's one of the options we do look at is, because you can provide, you can get away with a wetter cake, because you're going to blend in drier, much drier waste rock, and you'll get, you know, at the right blend ratio, you'll have a lot of strength. Can you switch from a pressure filter to a vacuum filter to produce the nexus necessary that can achieve the moisture you still want. So, I mean, it's that's really should all be part of the evaluation when you're looking at EcoTails. It's not just doing different blends of filter, you know, a pressure filter cake and waste rock, which we've done, but we do look at could we achieve that with a vacuum?
Yeah,
we do run into the usual difficulties in South America of just altitude.
Yeah,
the vacuums will struggle. They can be used at altitude. This when you're doing the testing in the lab, you need to remember to derate your vacuum and to get a record of what moisture can you achieve with it, so that you know whether or not you're going to hit the moisture target in the in your disposal area between when you mix even when you mix the waste rock. So it's all
The belt filters were pretty successful at La Coipa, and that's up there at pretty high altitude. But they were fortunate enough to have a lot of climatic drying after placement because it's such an arid place.
They did run into some issues there with the traffic ability of the material after it was put out. Didn't have sufficient ground bearing capacity for the mobile equipment on it.
That's the stacker.
So they did. I mean, they did work up there. I think over time, I'm not knowledgeable enough to know if it was ore body change because that does happen to most mines. There's ore body change. I know the vacuum. My understanding is the vacuum filters were working quite well at the beginning and performance degraded over life of mine. But again, that if you're not, you know, to me, the lesson there isn't necessarily don't ever use a vacuum filter, but it's make sure you understand the variability of your ore body over life of mine.
I think that's
pressure filters too.
Yeah, I think that's one of the most important things is different parts of the ore body are going to have different grinds coming out of the ball mills, and it's going to behave differently. And if you can provide as many different samples to a place like yours, going to give you a lot more insight on what the behaviors are going to be.
And I have seen customers more than used to that are wanting to test different, you know, tailings characteristics, even if it means artificially spiking a tailing sample with some clay, just to give them an idea of a worst case scenario that they, because they may have an understanding a bit of the mineralogy change across the ore body. And so they've got that. They may not have enough samples across, you know, of that variability, but they know that if they know the mineralogy changes, they can at least try to artificially spike a tailing sample and compare it to unspike, you know, where it's just normal tailings that they got would start with versus maybe 10 years from now. So I think customers are becoming more and more aware, just that you've got to look. I think there's enough of us in the industry telling them that you really need to understand that variability that they are looking at it now more than they used to.
And I just worked on a project in South America where a client was looking at incredibly large scale production of the blended tailings and waste rock. So, the filtered tailings are being looked at really high rates, and so is the blended product. So it's pretty interesting where the industry is going. Ken, I think I have run out of questions from my side, but maybe you could tell us if you've got any success stories that you could share.
We've had some. We do see, as I mentioned, there's more and more miners actually buying. So I mean, we've been selling some of our kind of filter. One of our pressure filter went through an upgrade recently. To expand its capacity. So it's we've got our 2.5 meter by 2.5 meter. It's an upgrade on our 2x2 that's been used in the industry. So that 2.5 by 2.5, we've recently sold some into Chile and Mexico. And these will be hopefully installed early next year and up and running. I've seen a little bit of a change as well, even in the smaller miners, we've been seeing more of them purchasing pressure filters, even for paste backfill. We've got historically a large install for paste backfill has been vacuum filters, to give the necessary control and moisture. But I think some of them we've been selling in, you know, pressure filters is because it's, you can get, you know, you may be grinding finer to get liberation. You're at altitude for some of these paste backfill.
So some of,
I think one of the orders for the 2.5 was for a paste backfill plant. The other one is for surface disposal. But we're seeing even more regions. You know, we've sold some filters into Southern Africa for a paste backfill. So there's just a lot more, you know, people putting the money out now. I mean, there's been plenty of years of investigation for some of them, and they're just doing it now. I think a combination of their sustainability commitments that they've made to both local communities and governments, but also their investors, and just, you know, we mentioned earlier, there's been some regulatory changes, not just in Brazil,
but
are driving it.
So
yeah, we've seen quite a bit of success both in filter sales, and we've been seeing a lot of, you know, people investigating the paste using our deep cone thickener. Those have been going out quite a bit. And that we always are willing to look at paste. I mean, there is a significant cost change between paste and filtered. So if paste is the right solution for your plant, then go with it. So, I mean, it really is, you know, look at whatever needs to be done and we'll support it. I mean, we have the product portfolio to support customers, you know, anywhere, you know, what they may be looking at, not just in the dewatering, but we've been developing newer vinification technologies that'll help coarsen up, you know, there you see coarse flotation being utilized. That coarser material going to the tailings obviously improves dewatering performance. So there's just, it's pretty exciting that there's just so much going on. There's a lot of interest, but there's also a lot of developments going on in tailings.
Do you ever do trade-off studies about comparing grind size for mineral recovery? A lot of places grind really fine, so they get more gold out, but then you've got additional costs for filtration. Do you ever get involved in optimization studies that says, well, actually you should grind a little bit coarser, and here's why?
Yeah, we have done it for a couple where they did look at, and they tried to do an overall cost analysis for their plant, for a greenfield, that what would, if you can go, you know, coarser, you obviously may lose a bit of recovery, but do you, the money lost in your recovery, is it gained by savings in your comminution and your dewatering area?
Yeah.
So we have looked, I think it was 3 grind sizes for one of them. The last one we did, I believe, was 3 grind sizes. And, you know, we provided equipment sizing and those costings, and then they went into rolling it up to look at that comparison, you know, what would give them the optimal plant design.
Ken, we covered a lot of stuff today and I'm out of questions. Was there anything you wanted to talk about that we haven't already mentioned?
No, I think we've covered a pretty good range of it.
Yeah.
I mean, just one of the things that we've just a new release for us, really, kind of, is we did develop a new, not develop, we've built a new conveyor tester for South America. So that's now available. I mean, we've had our unit here in North America that we've been using since that was part of the EcoTails development. We developed a way to look at that conveyability. And we just had enough demand on it that we built a second one in South America. So it just goes back to, I mean, the demand is out there for people want to know more and they need numbers. And so we continue to, you know, to whether it's building more pilot equipment to service enough people or just more testing equipment in general to try to get out there so we can help as many people as we can. So just encourage everybody to keep looking. I mean, I think there's still even a lot of stuff that's in your early development phase that I get to see customers, you know, not customers, but other, well, some customers are involved in, but a lot of companies out there are looking at even, you know, maybe be in early phases of their development for a new technology or process that it's quite interesting.
Yeah. I think we're going to see even more innovation, and you're probably seeing some of the early days of that. So I look forward to what comes out of your work next.
Appreciate the opportunity to talk. It's always enjoyable.
Yeah. And thanks for your time, Ken, and all the best. And hopefully we can catch up at Decime or something like that.
Yeah, sounds good. All right. Thanks again,
Dan. All right. Thanks, Ken.
Take care.
You too. Bye.
Bye.
Well, that's it. I'm Brian, and this is Behind the Scenes with Brian. Until next time, keep on rocking.